Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Alyssa Mastromonaco and I talk about the Trump administration's latest anti-immigrant moves and why Ken Cuccinelli probably shouldn't rewrite any more American poetry. Then special guest Akilah Hughes joins in studio with Tian Tran and Dana Schwartz to talk about why flirting is so fraught with mystery and confusion. Then, as always, The Hills Will Die On. Before we get to the show, a little bit of housekeeping. If you want to submit a Hill You'll Die On, record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. If you want to submit a question for Dude You Asked, please send it to us at hysteria@crooked.com. That doesn't need to be a voice memo. You can just write it down. You can also submit questions via Twitter and Instagram, and don't forget to check out the segment on IGTV. I want to give a shout out this week to a special group of listeners. This week, I'm giving a shout out to people who work in retail. It's back to school shopping season, and I hope you're all staying sane. Now let's get to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Alyssa.
Hello, Erin.
Alyssa, do you have a favorite American poem?
No.
Well, let me recite one of mine, or part of one of mine from the poet Maya Angelou. It's called Caged Bird. And I'm going to quote a stanza. The caged bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still. And his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the caged bird sings of passing a wealth test in order to get a green card. Oh, wait, this is the Cuccinelli edition of Caged Bird.
He's rewriting everything this
he's
week.
Rewriting all the poems, stopping by the woods on a snowy evening, but only if I'm not going to get food stamps. Also a rewrite by Cuccinelli.
Cooch.
Anyway, I was an English major, and this is the first time in my life that I've used that education. So congratulations to me, but most of all, congratulations to all of you. Let's get started with the news. Last week, after mass shooting tragedies that his rhetoric arguably helped normalize, if not cause, President Trump visited two cities that didn't want him there to perform some empathy kabuki. The public, unsurprisingly, wasn't really into it, especially the photo he took with a baby orphaned in the shooting, where the first lady is holding him up like a Christmas ham she baked, and Trump is giving a thumbs up. Real weird stuff. Whenever things start going badly for the president, he opens up his bag of trick and does what gets the media's goldfish brain attention the fastest. He attacks either immigrants or black people or women, and sometimes more than one of those categories at once. So, Alyssa, let's talk about his latest, I guess, goldfish media brain attempt to wrest attention back to the fact that he's a racist. So this week we've had former failed Virginia gubernatorial candidate Ken Cuccinelli out there defending a new plan by the Trump administration to make it more difficult for legal immigrants to get green cards by instituting a wealth test. Before we get into the actual policy, Alyssa, I want to talk a little bit about Cuccinelli himself. First, what do you think the new rule is designed to do? And do you think Ken Cuccinelli is doing a good job promoting it?
I mean, I guess it's who is he promoting it to? You know, I mean, he's not doing a good job promoting it to me. I mean, the rule is designed to, I mean, he's pretty explicit, actually, in some of his interviews. It's made to promote immigration from European wealthy white people. Right. And to make sure that people who really need to come to America, people who need help, people who are escaping persecution, crime, poverty, they can't come and or stay here. But worse than that, it's like even if you're here legally, he wants to make it impossible for you to stay. And they're also promoting this issue where they say, you know, if you're on public assistance, you know, we've got our eyes on you. You're not going to be able to stay. We want people who can stand on their own two feet, as if it is some pervasive problem that people who come here are all living on food stamps and SNAP. And, you know, I guess it's just they're just going to keep going. You know, I think they think that, you know, some of their core base supporters are going to think this is rad and, you know, like build the wall and all that shit. But I mean, I really don't know, other than to make us feel scared and bad, what it's meant to do.
I mean, and it's going to get the shit challenged out of it in court.
Like, totally.
This is something that is going to end up costing people a lot of time money and brain power fighting both to defend and to try to fight against. And it feels to me like just a big waste of time for everybody involved. And also, like, weren't public assistance programs designed to help people to get on their two feet? Like, Alyssa,
yes.
Were you ever on any form of, I mean, if this is too probing a question, no, it's not too probing a question. Have you ever
Hit
been
me.
In your life on any form of government assistance?
I did get one of those loans when you go to college. What mm-hmm. are they called? The FAFSA, whatever that is.
I think it's like a Pell. They have Pell grants and all different kinds of stuff.
Whatever it was, it was like $2,500 a year. That's a form of support from the government.
Mm-hmm.
But no, actually, though, growing up, I was at a grocery store in upstate New York. I worked at a grocery store in upstate New York, which was the only one in like 40 or 50 miles that accepted food stamps and WIC back then, mm-hmm. For women and children. And guess what? It was not this pervasive problem that people were abusing them. And guess what? A lot of times people came in for a couple of months with their food stamps and then they didn't have them anymore. So like, I guess they're creating this epidemic where there is no epidemic.
Right. I mean, and here's the thing, like people come to America ostensibly because it offers them the promise of economic development. It offers them the promise of pursuing career goals and social roles that they were not able to pursue in their own countries. So doesn't it make sense that somebody would come in here if they're seeking a better life from a life that is not as good as the life that they want to reach? Like, and America can stand in the middle of what a person is and what a person wants to be by giving them a little bit of a boost. I mean, when I was a kid, I was on reduced school lunches, and
right.
that's a form of government assistance. And, you know, I think I got some Pell grants in college as well, which is a form of government assistance. And, you know, it's like, I don't know what they think people who are on government assistance are, but I will say that a lot of states that rely the most on government assistance are the ones that voted the most heavily for President Trump. So
correct.
I find that to be an interesting kind of tension as well. Do you think that racism is at the root of this policy? I mean, Cuccinelli said explicitly during an interview that he wanted European immigrants, which is like kind of a cocky thing for a guy with an Italian last name to say, because like people truly didn't want Italians when his relatives were coming here.
No one wanted the Italians. Nobody wanted Germans. Nobody wanted Jews. Like
nobody wanted the Irish, which
nobody wanted the Irish.
To be fair, as somebody who has an Irish last name and has dealt with a lot of people with Irish last names, I sort of get the Irish thing. I mean, like public facing Ryans are fucking up. That's what I will say.
It's unfortunate, but there's no relation, so it's fine.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, it just seems like this rule would affect mostly immigrants from Latin American countries. Do you think that was what they wanted?
Of course. I mean, because he's been explicit about it for the past however many fucking years. It's like, don't come from a shithole country. If you're from Mexico, you're a rapist. I mean, these are all the things, and the shithole countries were Africa. I mean, he doesn't want more people of color, and he thinks he's being coded. Like, he thinks this whole thing, the cooch is out there, is like somehow escaping all of us what they're actually talking about. But no, this is all about not wanting more brown immigrants to come to America. And you know the funny fucking thing about this? I've been watching this series that Vice has been doing about immigrants in America. And the whole thing about everything Donald Trump does is that it's not based in any science, in any fact whatsoever, which we know. But this law that he wants about, you know, people, if they come, you know, if they're on foreign assistance, they shouldn't be here and they should go. And we want people
to
stand
have
on their own two feet.
And they should have their own private insurance, which like isn't a thing anywhere else. Like, why would anybody come to America and have
Correct.
Private insurance?
But here's a gem of a nugget. Every year, people who are not authorized to work in America contribute roughly $13 billion to our economy in payroll taxes, to Social Security. And because they are working on fake or like expired Social Security, not expired Social Security numbers, but they're fake or they've made them up or they're from someone who's deceased, they can never claim the Social Security that they've been contributing. So what Donald Trump's plan really does is just remove $13 billion a year that we've been getting that they can't even like take from.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like Social Security is exactly flush right now either.
Right. $13 billion. And it's like, did he read that? It's not that hard. You don't have to go deep into an Encyclopedia Britannica to find that one out. It's like a very readily available fact.
Yeah. I mean, Encyclopedia Britannica, Alyssa, that is a deep cut.
Thank you. Showing my age.
I mean, we had encyclopedias too. We also had the CD-ROM of an encyclopedia where you could just click on various pictures and it'd be like, this is a dinosaur. And we'd be like, wow, technology. But here's the thing about trying to restrict lower income immigrants, which are an integral part of the American economy. Here's the thing about restricting them from coming here. Like, almost every person I know who is of European descent or who has had family that's been here for many generations has a story, unless they're a lot of people whose families have been here for many generations has a story of how their relative came here and they had no money. They had like $5 in their pocket and a big dream and one of those newsboy caps or whatever people were wearing when they came over. And I think in order to service the racism of Donald Trump's base, we're not only cutting our nose off to spite our face, we're cutting our heart out to spite our face. And it seems like this country can't continue unless we are welcoming to people who are coming here to seek a better life for themselves and willing to work for it and possibly needing government assistance in the process of working for that. It just seems like so short-sighted. We're making things worse. We're making it worse for ourselves in the service of racism.
Correct. And it's like, look, you know, my Oma, which is German for grandmother, my Oma always told me the story of the St. Louis Manifest, which was the steamliner that came across the ocean in 1939, carrying Jews, bringing them to hopefully Cuba, but Cuba wouldn't accept them, and then brought them to America. And we like mobilized the Coast Guard so that they couldn't come in. And then they went to Canada and they couldn't come in. And then they went back to Europe and the French took some of the 900 Jews that were escaping the Nazis. The Belgians took some, Netherlands took some, and ultimately about 300 of the people who were on that ship went to Auschwitz and other camps and were killed. And so when she came to America, one of those stories, all she had was the aquamarine that she smuggled in my uncle's diaper to America. That was all the money she had. Like, she came, guess what? She got a fucking job. She worked at Bamberger's and she folded, like, when you would call to do mail order, she was the woman who put that shit in a box and sent it to you. And she made her money and they were like good contributing members of society, which is what every single person who comes here wants to do.
Yeah.
Like, and he is just this, and anybody who pretends it's true. Can you find one person that you know who's like, oh yeah, my people, they're from here. No, they're not. No one's from here.
Yeah. And the people who are
first Americans
and the first Americans were not treated. We kind of like took all their land. So like there was a period of time in pretty much everybody's family history where we were like, where everybody was like, well, we don't have anything right now. I think, you know, I was thinking also about kind of the cruelty behind this, because these are legal immigrants that we're talking about. These are people who came here through the proper channels, didn't break any laws, and are just trying to seek green cards, which is a really hard thing to do. I have a member of my family who just not long ago got a green card, and it took years, and it was this whole process, and it cost so much money, and it took so much time. It's hard to get a green card, and these are people that are following the rules, quote unquote, which is something that Republicans love to harp on. And, you know, now we're penalizing people who are following the rules. This is a fucking shit show.
It is a shit show. And it's also just so fake and so depressing. You know, it's like, they're just, it's like whenever they do these things, you're like, okay, what's really going on that they don't want us paying attention to?
I mean, there are some real aspects of this. Like, first of all, the ICE raids in Mississippi. Last Wednesday, ICE raided 7 food processing plants in Mississippi. They detained 680 people, and it was the biggest single-day, single-state immigration sweep in U.S. history. There were children left crying on the streets after their parents. There were school districts in the area that were left scrambling to find ways to take care of children whose parents were taken away by ICE. This was like a very public thing. It was a very overtly cruel thing. And it's really something that's like a real effect of this kind of thing that the president is doing publicly right now.
Right. And the thing is, there are always going to be raids. There are employers that violate law and employ people who are not documented. But like, there are rules and regulations, and there is a way by which this occurs. And it's like they're just doing backflips to be as inhumane as possible.
Like, to a specific group.
To a specific group
who are not white.
First, five of the seven plants were owned by Koch Foods, as in the Koch brothers. One thing that they're always supposed to do, that ICE is supposed to do before they conduct these raids, is notify Child Protective Services in the state, which they did not do, so that like provisions can be made for the kids whose parents are going to be who are being arrested. And it's like they go to such extreme lengths to traumatize people. And I think that's it's really sad.
Yeah. I mean, and another real impact of this, and this is bringing it back to last week, is that the ideology that leads people to believe that this country is better off if it's whiter is the same ideology that led the person who drove to El Paso and tried to kill a bunch of Latinx people to do what he did. And it's the same ideology that led Senator John Cornyn to tweet, "Texas gained almost 9 Hispanic residents for every additional white resident last year." It's the same ideology that governs Steve King, Iowa Rep. Steve King, who has said that culture and demographics are our destiny. We can't restore our civilization with somebody else's babies. And this all ultimately leads to racist violence and bloodshed. And, you know, it's interesting that, I mean, I said at the top, kind of tongue in cheek, that I think that the president had a really bad time going to Dayton and El Paso and having people be like, "Fuck you, get out of here." And that was a bad week of press for him. But now what he's doing is expressing the ideology that led to some of that violence in policy this week, which I think people are maybe losing sight of. There's a through line between those two things.
He's so consistent.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that we can pretend to be surprised by any of it. As long as Stephen Miller is kind of slithering through the West Wing, this is the sort of thing that we're going to see over and over again.
I guess so. I mean, 2020, baby.
Yeah. It's like hard not to be discouraged. I've been pretty discouraged this week just because it's so gross.
Cruel
and gross. And I wish there was a way for me to be like, hey, you know, I spend most of the night or most of the nights of the week at my fiance's house. Maybe like an immigrant family can like use my bedroom. I don't know. Like, I wish there was something that I could do that was like, because I want them here. And why do people who don't want immigrants here have more of a say than people like me who want them here?
And me.
And you. Anyway.
We both do.
Okay, well, let's move on to toasts and roasts. Alyssa, do you have a toast or a roast this week?
I have a toast.
Okay, let's do it.
Prepare yourself.
Okay, I'm ready.
So again, hardcore upstate New York lover that I am, I grew up loving Natalie Merchant and 10,000 Maniacs.
Okay.
Obsessed. She used to come through my line at the grocery store, and she always had recyclable bags. And when she came through my line, she's like, "How come you're the only one here today?" And I was like, "Because everyone's getting ready for prom." And she surprised us and showed up at our prom. And so this is why I have a deep love for her. But here is why I am toasting her. Because it was just reported that she has been teaching a Head Start course here in upstate New York for quite a while. And she didn't want anyone to know about it. Like, the kids don't know who she is. She's still selling out concert venues like across the country. But she is using her time to teach Head Start. And I was just like, I thought that was cool. And I wanted to toast her.
Wow. That's good. I had a roast, right? But I think I'm going to save it for next week because I would like to end this on a little bit of a high note. I love that. I love that, right? She's teaching pre-K or like a early childhood class. That's
and she's
so great.
Teaching them how to sing.
That's very cute. I love that.
I thought so.
Okay, Alyssa. Well, it was lovely talking to you as always. And let's chat more next week.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Okay, we're back. We're at the part of the show where we spend a lot of time talking about things we spend a lot of time thinking about. Let me welcome the wonderful women who are joining me today. First of all, she is a comedian and actor, Tien Tran.
Hello.
It's been a minute since you've been here.
I know. I'm so excited to be back.
I know. This is like the post-soccer
era. This is, we're living in a post-World Cup time. It's too hard. And I miss that LA victory tour game, too.
Oh, I did, too. I was traveling, but I'm sure they'll keep playing soccer.
You're right.
It's not going to be the same, but you're right.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to continue. No, they announced before it. They were like, this is the last women's soccer game. We're not playing anymore.
We're ending on the high note.
Exactly. It's like 30 Rock. They didn't want to go any more seasons. They were like, we need to end with the snow globe thing and Kenneth being an ageless ghoul.
God, I love that ending.
It's a good ending.
It makes me cry.
It's a good ending. Next up, we have writer, author, bookmaker, jumpsuit wearer, Dana Schwartz.
Mostly jumpsuit wearer. I bought the Fleabag jumpsuit.
You did?
I did. I thought it was too late. I know it had a moment, but then I came back and I regretted not being part of that moment, and I bought it.
That's, well, you know what? In 5 years, it'll be cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, don't wear it till then, though.
Yeah.
Okay?
I think it's a classic shape.
It's very flattering.
Yeah. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is such a goddess. Thank goodness for her. She's such a babe. Thank goodness for her. I'm so glad
that she exists
and she's writing.
Yeah, well, also thank her for her jumpsuit, you know, vanguard trendsetting.
Absolutely.
It's a great jumpsuit.
Absolutely. And also for her writing a perfect season of television.
Yeah, that too. Whatever.
Yeah.
Just perfect. Finally, so excited that she's here in the flesh.
She's dab.
On the left coast, we have Akilah Hughes.
What up?
Hey.
I like that I treat this like it's actually a radio show for truckers. I mean, it is, if you know, podcast or digital.
I don't know if we have any truckers that listen.
I bet you they do. Honk if you're trucking right now.
You'll be the only one honking unless there's another trucker listening at the exact same time.
That's right.
The two lonely truckers.
Kind of a cute meet cute.
Oh my God. Let's write a movie.
About two truckers.
Who listen to this podcast and honk at the same time.
And then fall in love. Oh my God.
I actually had the gay rom-com I want. I had a great aunt and a great uncle, hetero, and they were married and they were truckers and they would go on long hauls together and they had like a, they would take turns driving and one person would nap and then the other person would nap. And yeah, great Aunt Helen. She used to be a trucker.
Oh my God.
That's cool. That's cool as hell.
That is cool. Yeah.
Lady Trucker is cool.
Helen of Truck. I want to get into, it's too bad that can't be the episode title because.
Why not?
Helen of Truck.
It could be about anything.
Yeah, well, let's just bring it back up when we get to our topic.
Yeah, totally. And speaking of the topic, I want to read a little bit from this piece from The Atlantic, which was written by my favorite historian, Alexis Coe, who is great. You should read everything she's written. So she wrote about flirting and flirting's kind of fraught relationship throughout history. And she wrote about an anti-flirt movement in the 1920s. Ooh. So I'm just going to read from what Alexis wrote. On March 4th, 1923, the first ever anti-flirt week was organized. 1923, guys. Could think of how they were flirting all the way through the Revolutionary era.
They put those ankles away.
Yeah. The Washington Post published the club's rules. Rule one, don't flirt. Those who flirt in haste oft repent in leisure. Two, ooh. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I'm like, someone break that down.
Yeah, don't accept rides from flirting motorists. They don't all invite you in to save you a walk.
Oh, that must be a common thing.
Don't use your eyes for ogling. They were made for worthier purposes. Four, don't go out with men you don't know. They may be married and you may be in for a hair-pulling match. Ew.
I like. I kind of like that these rules are written with like a little like.
Yeah, they got a little
zazz to them.
Yeah, but they're also very bleak. It's like, don't go in a car with another guy. Wink, wink. You might get raped.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you have to pull his wife's hair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or his hair?
Yeah, there's going to be physical violence. Yeehaw. Don't smile at flirtatious strangers. Save them for people you know. Okay,
yeah,
but
I like that. Tell me not to smile.
Yeah, I like that one.
More of that.
Smile less.
Don't smile at strangers. I like that.
What if you were walking down the street and you were smiling and someone was like, don't.
I don't know you.
No.
7, don't annex all the men you can get. By flirting with many, you may lose out on the one.
Okay, that one actually is... that one I think is important and legit, and I want to come back to that one.
Okay.
After you go through
these. Rule number 9, don't let elderly men with an eye to a flirtation pat you on the shoulder and take a fatherly interest in you. Those are usually the kind who want to forget they are fathers. Absolutely
Oof.
True.
Yeah.
Wait. Absolutely true.
Yeah, yeah. That's...
Well, it's like, I remember the first time I was working in an office and there was like a much older guy that I was like, oh yeah, he's just saying cute things to me because it's like, he's not a sexual entity. But while I at age 23 might not have considered a man who was 55 a sexual entity, the reverse is definitely not true.
Yeah.
Yep. Men who are 55... do consider you a sexual entity when you're 23. Number 10, don't ignore the man you are sure of while you flirt with another. When you return to the first one, you may find him gone.
Too late.
Anti-flirt week. What did people do with their time?
I mean, yeah, you can't, there's like, back in the 20s, I feel like there was so few things to do that it's like, if you take out flirting, you're just like, I guess I'll read and do nothing.
Well, that's why the games are so weird, like hoop stick.
Oh,
you just run down the street batting
a
hoop. It's so hard and dumb.
Have you tried it?
Yeah.
Have you tried
it? It's hard and dumb.
I'm from the South. We had to go to these weird homesteads where everybody drowned and they were all buried on the property. And they were like, okay, kids, after you look at all the graves, we all have to play this hoop game. And we all just were like standing on the side like, it's just too hard. I don't understand this lifestyle.
Yeah,
and
like,
I understand why they all drown themselves. I get it.
It's all like hoop-based or cup-based or stick-based. Yeah. Like they're all hoops and sticks.
Wacky
and
sticks.
Yeah.
And no bouncy balls. They didn't have like bounce technology back then. So just like a heavy softball.
You just throw it.
Sand.
And I like old strong men, like men who are the manliest men working out, and they were in like onesies and like lifting things. And
they were just like walk with like barbells that had like
balls.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go back to the 1920s.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Although there was a anti-flirting movement, apparently. But I thought that that would be a good way for us to get into the topic of flirting. And by flirting, I mean not just like, you know, you see someone on a bus and you smile at them or whatever. I'm talking about like early stages of courtship where people are gauging romantic interest in each other. Mm-hmm. Or when people are just socializing and engaging romantically or flirtatiously. I think it's a fraught topic because right now there's so many ways that people can communicate and there isn't quite an agreed upon set of standards of like what constitutes flirting and what doesn't constitute flirting.
If there was,
flirting.
That would be so boring.
Exactly.
If there was like, I declare interest in you and the other person's like, I accept or do not accept.
Isn't that just
like,
what online dating is though? That's literally
sort of,
what it is.
In every period
this white
piece.
Face, yeah.
About the 1800s and white people. Like, you guys really did this? Like, you had to meet her father first before you could have half a cup of tea and like touch wrists.
I also feel like there's also the grand gesture that has sort of been lost. And you would see like, you know, I don't know, in a Capra movie, a guy would like play a phonograph outside of a woman's window.
Did you say anything with the
phonograph? It's so heavy. That's why they were lifting all those barbells.
It's just him with it on his knee, like, come out.
And it's like one of those like crackling records that they play like in The Shining. It's like,
she's like, that's my jam. Who's out there?
Midnight, the stars, and you. But let's talk about flirtation. First, Akila, I want to start with you.
Okay.
I think part and parcel with flirtation is the idea of game.
Yeah.
What is game, and do you think you have it?
Oh, I definitely have it. We'll start there. But game is, I think, It's definitely more about words and the sort of things that you say to people that get them a little like, ooh, you like me. Oh, like I'm really good at it. My style of game, though, is definitely just making boys blush. Just like saying cute things about, I'm like, look how cute you are. They're just like, stop it. That's kind of it. My game is really simple and it works every time.
Are you flirting with like 4-year-old boys who hide behind their moms?
Wasn't like, that no. All boys? Until they're dead. They're
spiritually,
like,
all boys are 4.
Yeah. They're like, I just want my mom to say I'm cute today. And I'm like, well, I don't want to be your mom, but you're cute. It's like very childish and dumb. But yeah, I don't know. There are some guys who've said some things. I'm like, oh, okay, wow.
That's interesting. Do you think that
I'm trying to think of a good line for you.
Well, I mean, can you remember any lines that you've used on people that have resulted in like, oh.
Ooh.
And do you have go-to lines that you go to?
Here's the thing.
Do you have repeat lines?
No. See, I improvise, and I am on the apps, but I do not see anyone from the apps. I'm the person that they warned you about who just sends you 100 messages and then ghosts. I'm like, I don't want to meet anybody from the internet. One time it worked. Somebody asked, have we met? And I was like, not yet. And then like just looked at them like, oh. It's like just simple ways of answering questions that like imply that you actually care to meet these people. It's like, I mean, the bar couldn't be lower in 2019.
That's true. That's definitely true.
I'm like, I showered today. And they're like, wow, she got gay.
Right. I think as like a hetero woman, there's like, you don't really have to try.
You just have to show interest and have boobs.
Yeah.
I mean, not even
it's
the boobs.
It's not that though. Even that, yeah.
I'm like, go to reformation.com. Yeah. That's not the ad for the day.
Y'all, it's not that different in the queer community either.
All right, let's talk about that. Have you noticed, like, because, you know, when you grew up, when you were younger, you've talked about how you were like, I like boys, but...
Oh, my God. When I was trying so hard to be straight, I was...
That's so heartbreaking. Yeah, why would anyone want to be straight?
Book title that doesn't exist.
Trying too hard to be straight. Oh, God. I, like, was a flirt because I wanted so badly to, like, fit in and not get caught. Like, not get caught out as, like, a lesbian. Mm-hmm. So I was a big flirt in that way that, like, I would agree to go with my best friend to hang out with the boy that she liked. Oh. And then he had a friend.
Oh, the classic double.
And I would go as well. And then it would just be like,
let's pretend we like each other.
Let's pretend we like each other and like put our feet in this jacuzzi. But I mean, like, when I think of game, I always thought of game as like, how often are you supposed to text? Like those rules. Like never like the in-person words and like pickup lines. I always thought of it as like, how many days are you supposed to wait until you're supposed to reach out to this person?
Oh man.
And zero.
Those, and
the
those games.
Zero.
And then I realized it was zero. Like when I started dating my partner, it's like, oh, all the ideas of games had like dropped to the wayside. And it was just like very easy and fun.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell my biggest game success story?
Yeah, absolutely.
When I was in high school, no surprise, I was a debater, like a national debater.
That is the least surprising thing you've ever said.
And there was obviously like one hot guy in the debate community.
Always.
There's always like one hot guy.
There's the one who's like, oh, well, his teeth, like he got his braces off, he's so like, he's kind of tall.
So there was one, and like everyone knows everything about them weirdly. He was like 2 or 3 years older than me and went to a different, like a school in the district, but a different school. So he had no idea who I was. But of course, I and my female friends, we knew everything about him. Mm-hmm. Graduated my senior year of high school. I'm a waitress at California Pizza Kitchen.
Ooh.
And who should walk in but the hot debate guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who, you know, is a few years older and has no idea who I am, but I know exactly who he is. So I pull this thing where, you know, he's at his table with like his brother, friend or something. And I'm like, you look so familiar. Do I know you? Knowing his first and last name, where he went to high school, where he goes to college. He's like, oh, I don't think I knew you. And I was like, oh, my God, your name here. You don't know me. I was like a freshman when you were a senior, but like all the girls had a crush on you in the debate world. And he's like, oh, haha, that's so funny. And I left my number on the check and he called and we went out.
Wow.
It worked.
Yeah.
Wow.
High school Dana.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Was it a fun date?
I think it was fine.
Okay.
I think I kind of realized he was not like debate hot. it doesn't really translate to the real world.
Right. It's like, no.
Like the currency.
The expectations are so high.
Yeah.
Debate hot is like writer's room hot.
Ooh, that's.
But I but I've been chasing that rush, that thrill of the catch ever since.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I think I was.
Jenna's just giving me this look.
No, I love
the
it.
The thrill of the catch.
That's really like scripted. It's like the version of yourself that if you could go back and write it as like, this is what I wish I would have made myself do. You did it.
Well, that's why I'm telling the story of me from 9 years ago, the one time it happened.
Oh my God. If I could, the very first time in college that I like slept in the same bed as another woman, it was so, we didn't do anything because we were shoulder to shoulder in an extra long twin, which is already like so much is happening.
Yes.
And I chose to talk about some guy. I wish I could go back and like make a move, but instead I was like, so Matt was like really into you. And I was like, oh, why did I do that? I'm fine
you
now.
Didn't
no,
pass
I'm
the Bechdel
fine.
Test. that scene, if it was scripted, is a problem. Yeah. I
oh
have
my
notes.
God. As a lesbian, you are not passing the Bechdel test. Yeah.
Wow. It's honestly just a gimme to pass the Bechdel test as a lesbian.
It is.
And you just
you whiffed
you own
it.
Gold. You own golden.
I know. Well, now I'm like 100% passing the Bechdel test.
I think I developed a sort of like anti-game just because when I was I'm from a really small town, really small high school, like never really felt the need to like flirt. And also,
because you're very pretty.
Yeah.
But I was that's like a pretty privileged thing to say.
No,
I have a perfectly symmetrical face. I don't know why I have to try.
Handsome men just come up to me.
Well, in high school, I was like very underdeveloped. I was like, I didn't get to be about the height I was until I was in college. Ryan's grow very slowly. So I was like 5'5", and I'm 5'7" now. I was like 5'3" until almost my senior year, and then I grew.
That
like,
makes you not flirt with people.
I was also like the same. I was like just a pencil. I was shaped like a pencil, and so I just kind of was like the sassy. Like I would just like turn to the guy sitting next to me and be like, I don't know, like make a smart ass comment, and that was my cultural. Yeah. That was my social currency. And then when I got to college, and then it was like, people want to talk to me. People come up and talk to me. It became a test to see like how weird, like the weirdness of things I could say and still like have them.
You're just a troll. Yeah. Get out of here.
I'm going to say I've never felt or been pretty enough to want to troll men.
Oh, God. There was a period of time. This is now something that I used to troll my friends. This is not a sexual troll at all. But when I was
platonic troll, okay.
That's the title.
Yes, sexual troll.
What is flirting but sexual troll?
Yeah, it's true. But I used to do this when I was using the dating apps before I met my future husband on a dating app. If there was a picture of somebody with an animal, whether that's their pet dog, a tiger.
Fish pics are really popular from what I've been told.
A fish, a cat. The comment that I would make is, which one's you?
That's good.
That's a great line.
That's a good line.
Wow, everyone should learn. Like, people listening should write that down. That's so good.
Which one's you?
Yeah.
That's the title of my memoir.
That's a good one.
It would be a picture of me holding up a taxidermied owl or something.
Which one's you, : sexual trolling.
Sexual trolling with Erin Ryan, who has never known what she's doing, ever. So going into like talking about meeting people, why is meeting people so weird and hard? Because like, you know, none of us are native to the city that we're currently in.
Yeah.
So like when you go to a new place, it's always just like fucking weird and hard to meet people, to be friends, but specifically to meet people in a romantic context. So like, why do you think that
there is? There was a golden age when Facebook first started, mm-hmm. and like everyone was on Facebook, when people like used it, everyone used it, and people actually wrote what their relationship status was and like meant it in an earnest way. And now you meet a guy and you're like, he might have a girlfriend or he might be married or like, I don't know what his deal is. So then you have to awkwardly put yourself out there and like flirt and just wait for him to be like, oh, yeah, I also saw that movie. It reminded me of my longtime girlfriend. So that's what's awkward for me when I was, you know, single. It's like that element of I don't want to, like, inflict my flirting on an unwilling partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it also gets really awkward when you're in a conversation with someone where you're like, I didn't know that this conversation would go on for as long as it has. When is it time for me to tell them that I'm either available or not available?
Yeah.
And then when I tell them, if I'm not available, when I tell them that, will it come across as presumptuous that I'm like, oh, you are trying to get, you know, I always hate it when I'm in a conversation with a man platonically. And he's like, yes, my girlfriend, you know, and like, and it's like, I'm not, if I were trying to have sex with you, A, I wouldn't be like in a relationship trying to sleep with some random dude. Second, like, you would know it more than, I don't know. It just feels like very.
But then on the flip side, when you have a partner and a guy, like, I have a lot of guy friends, and then the guy is like, hey, do you want to like catch a movie Tuesday? And like, it's a person I would like to hang out with. And what's the way to be like, yeah, but just FYI, not to presume anything. I don't want to say you have sexual interest in me, but like this would be a platonic thing, right?
Our faces aren't going to touch, right?
Nope. I love that you all warn people. Like, I'd just be like swerve hard in the middle of the movie, like, excuse me, I actually really wanted to see this. The Lion King is the highest grossing movie in America right now, so like.
Like, I don't warn people.
I think
the,
you don't.
What do you
I
do?
Mean, I feel like I've gone on a lot of things that were supposed to be dates and been like, well, I'm not feeling it, so now it's technically not a date.
Yeah, that's
it's
what
not
I...
a bad date if I don't make it a date.
It doesn't count. It doesn't go into your L column.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no L's. We have like we have a lot of wins, no losses, and one draw. Like that.
Aquila running out of a movie in the middle, going still undefeated.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, this movie was
just
bad.
Just friends.
Yes. We handshake before I leave first. We don't leave together.
One thing I think that has enabled and crippled meeting people is like technology.
Oh, my
because
God, yeah.
There's a lot available online about people, but there's a lot available online about people. But I also wanted to talk about how technology has enabled people in the LGBT community to meet each other, because I'm interested in your perspective. Like, do you have friends, and have you seen the way that it has impacted the way that LGBT people date?
Well, I never did the apps. I met my partner in person, but I was also way too intimidated to do the apps.
In person? Oh, how old fashioned.
I know.
That's every relationship I've ever had.
Met at my birthday party.
Really? Why was she there if you'd never met her before?
She was a friend of a friend.
Oh, that's the perfect.
And they had brought her.
Art.
And it was.
Did they bring her because they kind of thought that you two
yes,
had met?
Yeah. Yes.
It worked out.
And it did. Just look at us 6 years later.
Oh, 6 years. I'm going to leave.
I've never even kept a plant alive for that long.
Yeah, my longest relationship is my retainer. But go on.
That's actually good really good because
I'm like, it's still good.
It's really good. You know, so I can't speak to like from experience, but I know that like Grindr is such a big thing for cis gay men, and like I feel like people feel really kind of a mixed bag towards it, of having that access, but also that it's like desensitizing people to just like relationships and like meeting up with people. And
people are also really racist on Grindr.
Oh my God, they're insanely racist on Grindr. Yeah. So with some apps, it's like it allows you to, you know, find folks that you didn't get to find, and it helps find community in a way that's like, you know, it's kind of hard to still meet people both for safety and for access for queer folks.
Yeah.
And so like sometimes hitting on someone in public is like a risky thing safety-wise, like physical safety-wise.
Yeah.
And so I think those apps are great for that and allows people to like flirt and start a conversation, start a relationship without that fear, at least allaying that fear a bit.
Right, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's another interesting issue is like when there's a miscommunication, when people misread sexual interest or when you misread sexual interest. So how do you like determine when you, anybody here, have made somebody uncomfortable, and what do you do to rectify it? Like, have you ever flirted with somebody and they're like, whoa, 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 Nelly? Like,
oh, yeah.
And have you had to like pull it back? And how have you done that?
I think it's been a little while, because normally I won't, I don't know, I can't remember like a specific time, but I think the move is, for me, I'm a very like over speaker. I have no subtext. Everything is text for me. So if I do something, I'd be like, whoops, you have a girlfriend. Good to know. she's a very lucky woman. We can still be friends. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I just say it out there. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a specific example, but my move is definitely like diffuse the awkwardness by being super blunt. Like, we both know this happened. Let's just get past it and move on.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Akilah, do you have any?
No.
Only
it's never
wins.
Unrequited. No,
it's never unrequited.
I don't like very many people, so it typically is like, oh, cool, you talked me into it. I guess we're dating. Like I feel like I'm very rarely like seeking it out. I mean, I think sometimes online, like people will be like, oh my god, my friend has such a crush on you, and then like they'll DM me and be like, sorry, my friend said that. Like, I do like you, but I'm married, and I'm like, okay, well, I want to be removed from the narrative. I'm blocking both of you.
Yeah, what a weird thing for them to introduce. It's like, why are you putting this on me?
Yeah, I'm like, my day was fine. Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to eat my sweet cream quietly and listen to my music. And here we are.
Yeah, do you ever find, I mean, Tian, do you have an answer for that? Have you ever had to like dial it back?
When I was a baby gay, I was like so excited to be out. And so any woman who talked to me, I was like, oh, she's into me. And most of the time, they were straight women just because I was like in a space that was like more straight than it was gay. And I had to, I friended someone very hard thinking that they would like, they were flirting with me. And I realized it wasn't happening. And I had made her uncomfortable in terms of just being like, let's go out, let's do this, let's do that. And I just, instead of being responsible and an adult and like calling it out, I just like, ghosted.
Yeah. That'll happen. But you know what I think is confusing?
Don't you dare just say that'll happen and walk away. Well, you know.
You know.
Just
classic ghosting.
I mean, I'm literally, like, when I was, there was a company that I worked at once where they named leaving a party without saying anything the Aaron Ryan instead of the Irish goodbye, because I am such a ghoster habitually in micro and macro ways. And so I'm super, it is not the right thing to do, but yeah. I've been
no,
there.
No, it's not the right thing to do.
I've been there.
I got better at, like, reading it and being like, oh, okay, we're this right. is not what
I
it
mean,
is.
But do you think that when you first meet somebody of who's a member of the group that you're sexually attracted to, that you're not that at the beginning, interest is interest, and it's sometimes kind of hard to tell if you're excited about them because they're, like, an exciting, cool person and you want to be friends with them, or if you want to sit on their face?
Mm. Yeah.
Like, it's kind of too, that's such a gross way of putting it.
No, that's exactly how it should be put.
Yeah, I'm like, I mean, like, yeah. I've sort of
found, the reason that I wanted to flag that anti-flirt club room about the don't annex people is, like, what I hated about the apps and why I got off the apps was the feeling that, like, people were just kind of, like, collecting people, like, and then waiting for the next person. Like, not that I so much did that, but of course I did, because that's what the apps do. They, like, make people less humans than just, like, basic ideas, like, the outline of the general idea of a human. Mm-hmm. And then everyone is sort of like, well, I'm going on 3 dates this week, and you're always sort of looking over your shoulder and waiting for someone better. And I just found that really uncomfortable and dehumanizing, and so I, as a straight person who, you know, gets to walk through the world and be safe and flirt with, you know, generally whoever I want, I didn't find the benefits of the apps outweighed, like, that general feeling of ickiness I get. So I just use Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And that's legit.
Yeah, one time I was at a bar in Williamsburg in Brooklyn, and there was, like, this obvious bachelor party weekend situation sitting around a table, and like all the guys were like talking to each other and like being bros and like, I don't know, high-fiving and being like football. But there was one guy sitting there, and like, this is like maybe, I don't know, but I love like watching people in public who don't know that they're being
watched.
And like, especially if it's like they're eating alone or they're like just reading a book by themselves or they're whatever. And this guy was sitting there on his phone. It was just like laying on the table, and he was just kind of swiping right over and over and over and over and over again.
Every person.
He did it for half an hour.
Oh my gosh.
And he's, it was like, just, yeah, like, I remember at the time.
People do that. Like, that, it's weird to see it, but that is like the normal use of that
app. Like, that is right. the recommended use of it.
You just swipe right over and over and over and over and over again. And I remember just, like, it was like watching a monkey jerk off. You know, it was just like...
What? Where are you from?
I was just like...
What zoos do you go to?
No, but it was just like there was no... It was like a brainstem activity that had nothing to do with any sort of higher emotional function. He was just swiping right over and over and over again. And at the time, I was in a relationship with a different person. And I remember thinking, like, thank God, I am not out there. I'm not on the apps. And it was just... Ugh.
That's exactly it. I mean, being in LA and like the city of manifestation, I kind of feel like, unpopular opinion, I think the problem with the apps is that people go in thinking, this is what I want. And like in the history of the best relationships of my life, it was never like, this guy checks all the boxes. It was just like, wow, we're really having a good time. And like, it's good enough. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think... If you go into an experience with your expectations really high, almost certainly they will not be met. And so then you're mad being there. Every date you go on, you're like, well, that wasn't Prince Charming. And it's like, it's not gonna be.
Yeah,
right.
The world is melting. Like, find someone and just shut up about it. That's how I feel. Well, we got 10 more years.
That's your other book. That's find good. Someone and shut up about it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow. Oh my, you know, that's such an interesting way of putting it. Well, the apps will tell you, like, you're 96% matched with this person, and then you'll meet them in real life, and you're like, the sound of your voice makes me want to jump into a blender.
That's that 4%.
Right, exactly. Except for the sound of your voice. Mm-hmm. Or like, I just don't like the way that you gesticulate.
Sound of your voice is a big one.
Yeah.
I found that a lot of times, like, guys I, you know, get along with on the apps, and you meet them in person, and you're like, The voice is big for me. And also just like the human smell, like the pheromones, not that they smell bad, but they just smell wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like some people just like, it doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In like a human biological brainstem way.
There are a lot of men that like a specific genre of like jock, like frat guy still on his group text and he's 32. Like that. They smell sort of like a specific cologne mixed with chewing gum. And it's like a specific smell. And whenever I smell it, I'm like, no. Yeah. Like, and I mean, obviously I'm not dating now, but when I was dating, whenever, if I would meet somebody and I would smell like chewing gum mixed with this cologne, I'd be like, no, I'm out. Mm-hmm. And like now, even when I'm in public, if I smell it, I'm just like, oh, get me. Oh, I can't. Yeah. I can't be here. I got to get out of here. But the apps predict only like on paper. Like if you were just texting back and forth forever, this is how you would get along. But you actually have to like physically interact with them. I think Josh and I were rated like 85%.
That's
like
pretty
we
good.
Would
That's
80,
pretty good.
We would 85% get along.
That's pretty good.
Which I think is about.
I think it's more like an 85% chance that you would get along.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
If you're higher than that, then like
that's too weird.
It's too weird.
Yeah. I found the hardest situations for me are when I go out on dates with a guy that I genuinely like really like and we get along and he's funny and we have a lot of things in common and we talk, but like I'm just like I do not want to get naked with you. Like I'm dreading
the idea.
And then you're like counting down, and you're like, oh, this is like the fourth date. I know he expects something to happen, but I don't want it to. So you're like, that's the worst thing where you're like, it's not personal at all, but it's also the most personal to them.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, it's made me feel better about myself because all the times that, like, anytime a guy has ever, like, you know, broken up with me or, like, been like, oh, you know, I'm just not feeling it, I'm like, okay, well, there's this guy out here, right here, who's, like, amazing. He's smart. He's funny. He's, like, objectively attractive. And just for no good reason, I'm not feeling it. And I have no ill feelings towards him. And so if I feel that about him... Some people feel that about me, and that's totally fine.
Yeah, I mean, actually, there was a study that showed that men tend to do something called they have something called a sexual overperception bias, which is a real scientific thing. A study published in Psychological Science several years back found that the more attractive a man thinks he is, the more likely he is to read sexual interest into interactions with women who are not sexually interested, which is super interesting. But men who are judged to be attractive by women underestimated women's sexual interest. So a guy who's really high on himself thinks like everybody wants to fuck him, but women or guys who like just women think he's more attractive than he thinks himself.
The Johnny Bravo effect.
Yeah, apparently. But the study authors hypothesized if men's sexual overperception bias, I love
that's
really
a, yeah.
sexual overperception
bias. I'm going to say
bias.
That to someone to their face. I'm like, I think you what are, you're suffering from.
This is a sexual overperception
when
bias.
When I can read those men, I'm always like, my girlfriend, my girlfriend. I'm gay. I am very gay.
It says, if men's sexual overperception bias functions to provide men with self-confidence and motivation to approach desirable targets and to enhance men's apparent mate value, this pattern of results may reflect a
mate
sweet
value.
Mate value.
Mm.
May reflect a suite of adaptations designed to promote positive illusions among lower quality men.
Oh my low God. Quality. Low quality men and mate value.
Oh,
so
we have so many book titles.
Mate
I'm
value.
Just stealing it from psychologyscience.com.
Totally. But let's get into the topic because we have a lot of male listeners. And sometimes when I talk to male friends of mine, like a common concern of like non shithead men is like, what if I'm making a woman that I'm interested in uncomfortable? How do I know when that's happening? How do I pull it back? So, like, let's talk a little bit about male sexual overperception bias and how it has affected us and how maybe men who are trying to be good guys could try to head it off.
I'm going to make a rule, a general rule. And, you know, I feel like it's going to be applicable 90% of the time. So male listeners, take that what you will. If you text a woman a question or multiple sentences, and she texts back, ha-ha, and nothing else, just ha-ha, and then nothing else, she's not interested.
She's not interested in continuing that conversation at this moment.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Don't
really? Yeah.
But I think,
I mean, I think I would say, let's pick up this back up, I'm busy, or something.
Or she'll,
if I said ha-ha, I'm like, that is the end.
And if he asks you out, like, oh, like, I had such a great time with you last night, and then like a cute little joke about the movie, and the woman just writes back, haha. Don't use, just err on the side of caution.
Yeah,
that's my rule of thumb.
Like if you would send haha, you brought like to the male listeners who are straight, I suppose.
we've got gay male listeners, but I have zero expertise.
Listen, they don't need my advice.
I can't. Yeah, they have. You guys are doing great.
You're doing great.
Congratulations. Gold medal.
Congratulations, but I can't help you in any way.
Yeah, but I think that like I mean, just to Dana's point, it's like I think. Yeah, if you would send a ha-ha text and not mean it generally or want to continue talking, just pretend that the woman has as much agency and, like, a brain as you do.
Yes.
And they're making the same choice.
Right.
That's it, to be able to put yourself in their shoe. I've noticed something, and I wonder if you guys have. The second that I feel like I am unavailable, like, when I start dating someone in a relationship, it's, like, a real when-it-rains-it-pours situation where, like, then all the weird dudes who I, like, went on one date with who, like, ghosted me, who I haven't talked with, then they all slide into my DMs. It's like a pheromone signal sends
it
out
is.
Into the world the second you're off the market.
They're threatened. They can feel that there's blood in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't be one of those guys that joins the, like, I mean, if you, after I got engaged, when we came back to the States, like, I put it on social media, and I got, like, a few text messages from guys that were like, hey, congratulations. And it's like they were sort of like...
Like, they lost the game or something.
Yeah.
Like, good game, good game.
Yeah, good game.
Like, guys you haven't...
Good game. Oh, my God. Yes.
Like, guys you haven't heard from in a while, right?
Yeah.
They were like, hey, he's a lucky guy.
Oh, I hate that. See, that's it. That's
okay.
What I'm talking about.
He sure
I
is.
I have one, too, then. So, guys listening out there, if you liked a woman who is now gay, don't send them any compliments in their DMs about them and their girlfriend.
I have had that
happen too many times.
Mm. How many? More than one hand's worth of times
where, like, I will have this one fucking guy will come into my DMs and be like, oh my God, Merry Christmas. You guys look so great. And we like made out once at Lollapalooza. It was a bad day, but like, but it was 10 years ago and it was in the EDM tent. We all make decisions, but, but like, don't do that.
Yeah. Also, you know, that means that you're the most exciting thing that's ever happened to them. So they're like, I have to keep this relationship going so I can tell the story every day about how we made out in the EDM tent at Lollapalooza a decade ago. And now she is happily with someone else.
Yes. She's gay now. Your allyship doesn't need to be shown that way.
that's such a move. Like the slide, the adjacent to a relationship slide.
Yeah, it's such a weird move.
Have any of you ladies ever done that? Because I've never done.
No,
that.
I've never,
it's
of
never occurred
not.
To me to reach out to the man after. I'm like, oh,
no.
Good for you.
You, like,
you
guys look happy.
Sometimes I'll like my move is if a guy I like hooked up with and I still follow him on Instagram and I see he like got engaged, I'll like that Instagram post, which to me I feel like is a sign of benevolence, like utmost benevolence on my part. I'm like, I grant you happiness and my heart. Good on you. Good for you. That's the extent of my thing, is like a former hookup who gets engaged, I will fave an Instagram post.
Okay, that's fair.
That's nice.
You know, one thing that
I'm a really big person.
Oh, really? Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
Over here. One thing that I think is a little annoying that men have done in the past is that if you express, like, you're having a good time, you guys are like hanging out, your friends, and then they express romantic interest and it's not reciprocated, or you're not available, or for whatever reason, it's just not going to happen. And they just don't want to have anything to do with you after that. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, that sucks.
Sorry, my only worth as a human being was sexual organs.
Yeah. Were you ever want? Was this friendship real? Like, are you just not capable of hanging out with me without there being a sexual component?
And although, I think in that situation, you do have to give a slight benefit of the doubt, is if they had like a genuine crush and feelings, then it kind of hurts. Because I've been on that side, mm-hmm. where I'm friends with someone and I, you know, I'm interested and they're not or are unavailable. And then it hurts a little bit to hang out with them for a little while because you've had feelings for them. Mm-hmm. So that's the fine line, is like them being like, well, I don't like seeing them with their new partner. It makes me feel bad. Versus like, whoop, she's not going to suck my dick. Useless human being.
That's true. But, yeah. I think most perceptive people can tell the difference between the two things.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Where it's like the sort of interaction that ends with like, hey, do you want to go out? And you're like, no, actually. And they're like, oh. And the one that's like, well, fuck you, bitch. Like, those are two totally separate things that happen.
Yep.
Some of my queer femme friends, I like when I was first coming out in Chicago, I ended up having crushes on them, but then became friends because after a while you're like, there aren't a lot of us. We have to stick together.
Just maintain this.
You have to maintain this. We got along and we need to keep community.
Yeah, if the purge were to happen, yeah. We have to be,
we
on
have
the
to
same
be
team.
Together.
An alliance.
One more thing I wanted to talk about before we have to take a break and move on. What are some like TV shows and movies that are about dating that you have found to be either totally on the nose or totally off in La La Land? And like, how do you watch them as a way to connect with reality or as a way to escape from it?
Well, there's one that I think I like, but I don't remember the name of it. Can someone Google it for me?
Yeah, what's
it's on Netflix. It stars Jason Sudeikis and Allison
Brie. Oh, I love that movie. It's called Sleeping with Other People.
Yes.
It is excellent.
I love it.
Everyone should watch that.
I think it's really great.
Written and directed by a woman.
Yes.
One of the best rom-coms, I think, of the last decade.
I would agree.
Really?
And I think that, I mean, the one thing that's a little weird is like they're supposed to be the same age. And I'm like, come on. But it is like very, it's about a person who like really finally wants to settle down and stop sort of messing around and is in therapy to stop messing around. And she likes this guy, but she's also like still in love with the other guy. I don't know. But I think that it feels realistic. And it's also like, I mean, it does sort of end happy, I guess.
It feels super realistic, but still feels good. I really like that rom-com.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry that I
didn't give you any, there's no context about what it's about. But I will say they started sleeping together in college.
I think they lost their virginity
to each other
and then were just friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. And then years later run into each other. But the guy is also...
They're both like philanderers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's the way that I think that concept departs from reality. Because I think unless people really actively try to interfere with their personal demons, they're the, sort of like your
destiny.
Well,
it is based in New York, so.
Yeah. Right.
No, they had to work on
it. It's like they had to end the movie at the moment when they were happy because it's like, oh, this isn't going to work.
Yeah, 2 weeks later, yeah. She's back with the shitty old man. She's like, I don't know. I'm addicted.
Have you seen the television show? It was formerly called Scrotal Recall, and then they renamed it Lovesick.
Scrotal. Yes.
I remember seeing the name and being like, God, I'm never watching
it's
that.
It's so good, though.
Yeah.
Well, because it's like kind of that. It's British, but they named it. It was called Scrotal Recall because it's about a guy who finds out, I think he has chlamydia, but an STI, and then has to go back and call all his people he slept with. And so it's like kind of told like back through, you know, going through chronologically his relationships. And like the British, I interviewed, I remember because when I was working at Entertainment Weekly, I talked to the creator and he's like, we just thought the name Scrotal Recall was so funny and we just went with it. And then we were like amazed that it actually went with that name. And then it went on Netflix. And I think what happened was people were watching it, but then Netflix was like, would you recommend this to a friend? And everyone was like, no, I'm not saying that out loud. And so they changed the name to Lovesick. Hmm. But it's a really, it's a good, I think, representation of that dynamic when you're in your 20s and like flirting around and sleeping around and that you're not sure the level of seriousness of a new thing. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of this ineffable element of modern relationships that it captures really well.
Hmm. Okay. Well, mine doesn't like really in any way encompass anything real. I like think about this movie and it still like bothers me. Like I'll be going about my day and I'll just think about it and be like, God, that was fucking dumb.
Yeah.
The Wedding Planner.
Oh, with
Jennifer Lopez.
It comes together.
Another Jennifer Lopez movie.
I'm telling you, she's
my God. Imagine if your fiance left you for your wedding planner.
Exactly.
I think
she's the wedding planner.
And it's Matthew McConaughey pre-McConaissance in when he was like in his like rom-com phase. And yeah, he just like falls in love with the wedding planner and she's like very organized and it's just it's so stupid.
I have a question about that movie because I haven't seen it in a while. Is there anything wrong with the fiance? Is she like secretly a
she's
monster?
She's controlling.
Or is he just like, this bitch planning a wedding? I want to.
She's just a woman who is stressed out planning a wedding. Yeah. And like, I don't think that anybody is at their best when they're stressed out and trying to plan a huge party for a bunch of people who are like, it just is like so dumb.
She deserves a sequel.
She deserves a sequel. All of the, we should do a show about all of the women who got left behind, all of the like evil fiancés.
The disposable fiance is the name of the trope.
Yes, it is.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Like, she's usually blonde. She's like kind of like bitchy or controlling. Mm. And then she gets left for the more interesting person.
I made this when I worked at Entertainment Weekly and I made this gallery of the best 31 best disposable fiancés.
Is that Meredith Blake from Parent Trap on
wait,
there?
Wait, is Pretty Woman in there?
Yeah.
Idina Menzel?
For sure. She's just Idina Menzel.
Is the Baroness from Sound of Music on there?
She was a Nazi sympathizer, so she's fine.
She was always disposable.
You're right.
It's always like a pretty brunette with straight hair.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think you even see the fiance in Pretty Woman. It's just the first scene where he's like, well, okay, move out of my house.
Yeah.
Over the phone. Like, yeah. That's it.
It's been James Marsden like three different times.
He looks like he would leave his fiance.
Poor James
Marsden.
I'm
trying to think of like good queer representation of relationships that I've like. I always think about the L word, but mm-hmm. like not yeah. in full because the L word is. Kind of bad.
Yeah.
But like bits and pieces of different people's relationships were very formative for me that I think about.
When you watch Orange is the New Black, do you...
I've never seen it.
What?
Uh-oh.
Sorry
for my truth.
I found that show to be very like illuminating and interesting. And it was the first time that I saw a lot of queer relationships being depicted on screen as like a non-queer person. And it was like really... eye-opening
for
me.
I should go watch it.
Yeah. I mean, first season's great. Second season's great.
Second season is really good.
And third season was a little jump shock. Yeah. You know, stick around if you want to.
Okay. When we talk about TV and couples, I always... I can't stand Pam and Jim.
Yeah.
You can't stand Pam and Jim?
I can't stand Pam and Jim.
Why?
I think they're a bad...
She did leave her fiancé.
And he also does a lot of grand gestures that he... I mean, I've talked about this on the pod before, but, like, he makes a lot of grand gestures without consulting her, which I think is really fucked up.
Yeah.
I hated in the did anyone else see the movie The Greatest Showman?
No. Yes.
I hated that he did all this stuff without asking. He like bought a giant house without, he's like, I wanted to surprise you with a house. And then he bought a circus without asking her, and he's like, surprise, a circus. And then he goes on like an American tour without asking her. And yep. Then that's the one where she's like, I just wanted to be a part of your life and this one thing. And I was like, bitch, he did everything without you.
Yeah.
I hated their relationship.
I also
so
hated
angry.
That movie. They made it seem like P.T. Barnum was like the first person to put out a diversity fellowship and was like in a good way, when we all know he exploited everyone in the circus. Yeah. But it was like, you've given them a platform. It's P.T. Barnum.
Oh, man.
The okay, father of diversity fellowship.
Found Zendaya. It's crazy.
Well, guys, I think we've solved flirting. we have to take a break. I could talk about this for a long time because it's so fraught. Mm-hmm. And I think its fraughtness is a feature of it. So I'm sure we'll revisit this topic in the future. But when we come back, we will have The Hills Will Die On.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Okay, we're back. We're at the end of the show, but not quite the end of the show, because we still have to take stances that are very adamant about things that don't really matter. It's The Hills We'll Die On. Let's get started with our listener hill.
Hi, my name is Grace, and the hill that I'll die on is I don't want a fucking paper straw. If you're going to take away my plastic straws, okay, I get it. Single-use plastics are part of why the planet is currently boiling underneath us. But don't replace it with a piece of paper that's going to disintegrate in my drink and give me all those weird feelings when it rubs up against my teeth. Ugh, I get chills like fingernails running down a blackboard. Go ahead, keep your fucking paper straws. Give me a sippy cup or no straw. I can manage. I'm not a toddler. I'm not going to spill all over myself.
Oh my God, I'm so into this one. I'm so into this one. This past weekend, I stopped somewhere and I don't believe in iced coffee, as all of you know. It doesn't work. But
it doesn't work?
It doesn't work.
Hard to disagree.
It doesn't work. But Josh got an iced latte and there was a paper straw in it that was really cute and it had like little gold hearts on the outside. And was like, oh, isn't this Instagrammable? Within 3 minutes, it had just like disintegrated and it was like a paper like thing with a twist in the middle. It was just all soggy and
horrible. We just have to wait for paper straw technology to catch up with us. It hasn't been given a chance to grow.
We just need to stop putting ice in beverages and just drink them out of a cup.
Well, that's just not going to happen. Yeah. It's un-American. But I also agree. I don't like the paper straws. My biggest problem is that they always come in a plastic cup. And I'm like, isn't the cup bigger than the straw? Like, let's just give me a paper cup and a straw.
Right.
Or like a big plastic lunch. And they're like, okay, so you have a plastic fork, a plastic knife, a plastic container, and then a plastic cup with a paper straw. I'm like, the dry hump of caring about the environment. Like, we did it.
I don't like that they put saving the environment on us when there are like 5 companies that are dumping just like gallons of plastic and garbage into the oceans. And they're like, it's your fault that you're not recycling. Yeah, it's like the amount I'm recycling and doing like literally everything in my power in a year is probably like there like Tuesday morning.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It's sort of empty. It's like conservation theater. Yeah. Like, I'm making this. It doesn't make any sense. It's like ordering a big value meal at McDonald's. Just huge fucking Big Mac, huge fries, and a Diet Coke.
Yeah. I'm like, I tried. Yeah. Like, just let the world burn. Yeah. We had our turn. Series finale.
All right. The hill I'll die on this week is very pure and innocent. So it's summertime and it's hot in most places. I'm going to go ahead and recommend for a dessert, get a thing of blueberries, put them in the freezer. Frozen blueberries are a treat. Put them in the freezer and then like the next, just have them.
I'm incredulous.
They're so, so good. They freeze perfectly. They're like little mini like iced popsicles and they have, they're so, so good. They're a treat.
The you've, opened my eyes. You've opened my eyes to like a hill can just be like a good thing.
Yeah.
Like a tip.
Yeah. It's a tip. Here's a tip. Frozen blueberries are a treat. Put some blueberries in the freezer and then just pop them in your mouth as you're watching TV, like popcorn or like a
instead of having like delicious ice cream or something that tastes better.
It's a good Whole 30 replacement. Yeah.
Exactly. Do you not like blueberries regular, Tim?
No. I mean, I like them like hot and like melted into a muffin or something. Like a regular like temperature blueberry is just like
I bet you upsetting. Can't you can't picture it, but just give it a try.
I'm gonna give it a try.
I'm gonna record myself and I'm gonna be like, if I die because Aaron said this tasted good. A heart attack about
I died of something tasting underwhelming.
Yeah, yeah. My heart will stop if it's gross.
It's like, have you watched that, that series on Netflix, I Think You Should Leave Now?
Yeah.
Where that one with the older boyfriend, when he burns his lip on room temperature gazpacho because he was expecting it to be cold.
Yeah, that's Tim Heidecker.
He's so funny.
Oh, that show is so good. Okay, who wants to go next? Dana, do you want to go next?
I got one. My hill. Inspired by Aaron's a positive hill stance.
Oh, wow.
Is,
don't come to us.
The film Josie and the Pussycats.
Oh, excellent.
Is a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And that's the hill I'm going to die on. That it was sort of underrated at the time. Not really, critics didn't really like it because it's super tongue-in-cheek and campy and ridiculous, but it knows it and it has fun with it, which is the best thing a fun, like, lighthearted movie could be. Which a thing about a movie about Josie and the Pussycats should not take itself too seriously. The songs are genuine.
Slap.
Yeah, they genuinely slap, and I listen to them to this day. Yeah.
Is this the most recent one or the one with Rachel?
Rachel Lee Cook.
Okay.
Rachel Lee Cook, huh. Rosario Dawson, Tara Reid. The villains are Alan Cumming and Parker Posey.
Yeah. It's art. It's such art. It's all about, like, the over-branding and commercialism of just, like, the world.
Yeah,
and
I'm sponsorship.
Like, Hollywood, if you're listening, I would be honored to write an updated version about Instagram.
Yeah. Truly. It's about
needs to be adapted for our times.
It's about, like, the insidious hidden product placement and telling teens to join the army and buy American-made products.
Also, okay, I'm going to watch Josie and the Pussycats and eat some frozen blueberries.
Yeah, what a great Sunday afternoon.
I would watch Parker Posey do basically anything.
Yeah,
I would watch her fill out forms. Like, she's good in everything.
She is really good in everything.
All right, Tan, do you want to go?
Cool, I'll bring us down. I'll be a negative. Happy to. since it's wedding season and we just talk about flirting and relationships, I think the hill that I will die on is that I don't think anyone should ever call their partner and or boyfriend, girlfriend their best friend. Mm-hmm. I can't stand it, and I think it's really annoying because I don't think you should make your person be everything in every way. And I think being like, they're my lover and my partner in crime and my best friend. I'm just like, no, first of all, you have put this person on a pedestal in a way that could never be reached. And what about your real best friends?
Yeah.
And I never wanted to fuck my best friends when I, you know, like, don't, they're not your best friend.
Your best friends flew across the country and spent $900 for your bridal shower.
Yes.
Yeah.
You are not
better
marrying
friends.
Your best friend.
Okay.
That's
okay.
The hill I will die on.
I can get down with that.
Yeah.
All right, Akilah, do you want to bring us home?
Yeah. All right. So let's get real. Hill I'm going to die on. I think movies with overt scary and TV shows with overt scary CGI monsters need to have directors tell the actors to react to the smell of the monsters. It drives me crazy when I watch Stranger Things and there's a scary giant spider breathing in their face and they're like, I smell nothing. Like, really sell it, okay? You want to throw up. That thing is, like, you know that E.T. smelled like garbage. And he's touching Drew Barrymore, and everyone's just like, it's great. I love having it in my house. I'm like, what does that smell like? Like, no, there's no scene where they're washing him. He never takes a bath the whole movie, I don't think.
Can I say something really gross? And we should probably cut this.
Yes.
In my mind, E.T. smells like an uncircumcised penis.
And no one reacts. They're all just like, now there's an alien in the house.
It's too many. There's too many skin folks.
Akilah, I would like to see you with just a supercut of all of these monsters.
Just making
just
sounds.
Insert yourself into the scene, just being like, oh.
Yeah, like, oh my God.
Oh my God, nobody else smells this.
Yes.
Like Sigourney Weaver needs to be like, gagging as the alien is breathing into her mouth. Like, that's what I want
to
see.
You need to be in the background of every
movie.
Just like, oh, I'm going to barf. Oh, it reeks. Oh my God, what is that? Like, just act like it stinks. I'm tired of watching things where I'm like, well, clearly that monster's not there.
Or, I mean, like, who do you think would smell good of all the monsters?
So yesterday.
Patrick Bateman.
Yes.
Oh.
Patrick Bateman probably smelled good.
Really good. He used very expensive soap.
Yeah.
I feel like, so I thought a few days ago that maybe Thanos stank, but in hindsight, I'm like, he's
no,
clean
he's
shaven.
Clean, yeah.
He was cooking. So I'm like, this is a guy who has hygiene and he's rich and owns all the time stuff, whatever. So
Voldemort never washed those robes.
Oh my God. I bet you would smell just like high heaven. Just like sweat.
Peter Pettigrew probably smells like shit.
She's been a rat for so long.
Gamer basement. Gamer basement smell. Yes.
Musty basement.
Yeah. But like a guy. Like a bunch of guys have been playing video games down there for a long time, drinking Monster Energy drinks and not taking showers.
And like eating Soylent.
Yeah. Just like baked Doritos. Yuck.
Yeah. That's a good point. Because it's clearly also, also in this season of Stranger Things, the monster is so gross.
Yeah.
And he's so played up as like, it's like exploding rats can come together and make a spider. Mm-hmm. Like, and the meat spider would smell bad.
Yeah, except it would smell like absolute hot trash. And no one acts like that's the problem.
If you've ever had a single mouse die in your apartment, that is the worst smell in the world. Yeah, like a bunch of exploding rat guts in the nether realm.
Yeah, like you would just take that cage to the newspaper all by itself and be like, you smell it? Something's wrong with these rats. They don't even have the mouth yet. You'd be like, this smell is heinous.
But would love to see you in a scene where there is an alien. You're like, not too bad.
Yeah, like, wow.
Wow.
Oh, my God. What is that smell? I can't even describe it for the people at home.
Like, what if it turns out that the alien from Alien has, like, breath, but the breath is really nice?
Oh, my God. Then she wouldn't be, like, so whimpery. She'd be like... And then, like, they maybe make out.
It's kind of like lavender. It's a little bit of floral, but like edible lavender, like a nice, like, tasty floral, like you'd find in a wine, like a note of lavender.
Yeah.
That's great. I can get down with that.
And, like, 90s CGI really did it. Like, they would, like, burp and green shit would come out. And you'd be like, okay, so the green is the stink line.
Yeah.
It's implied that it's bad. But now they're like, ah, the green was stupid.
Yeah.
Let people imagine.
Nobody could smell in the 80s, so everybody was doing cocaine.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's everybody's noses were fucked.
Yeah.
Do you remember for a second when it seemed like Smell-O-Vision, when like they were trying to come up with gimmicks for movies and it's like 4X, like your seat rocks. And it's like, we spray a smell at your face. Well, like they thought that was the height of movie technology.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
They still do it at Disney.
I'm really glad.
And I'm always like, no one wants this.
I don't want anything sprayed in my face.
Yeah, the smelling, no.
No. We don't need to experience it, but I think Akilah is right. The actors on screen
should sell the smell danger.
Mm-hmm. Sell the smell. Okay, on that note, we're going to end the show. Dana Schwartz, Akilah Hughes, and Tien Tran, thank you so much for being here. Thanks to Alyssa Mastromonaco for calling in, and there'll be more Hysteria next week. Hysteria is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Rustin is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Nadina Melkonian and Elijah Cohn, for production support each week.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dix.com/scorecardplus for details.